So good afternoon, everyone. I'm Ting Li. I'm a postdoc fellow at Fermilab, but only for the next 3 months. That's how I'm gonna start. But yeah, and so today I'm gonna talk about the southern stellar stream in 60 plus one space. And I wanna start my talk with two plots here. That this one you have heard many times. From yesterday and today's talk that are made by Vasily, and you also maybe see the other version that either made by Anna or made by Carl using the SDSS data. But I also want to advertise that we made a similar field of stream in a different patch of the sky with the DES data. This is a field stream with made by Alex Derek Wagner that you show the Sagittarius stream like this here, and also a few thin streams, and also the outskirt of LMC. There are a few more streams that you cannot see from this plot, but I will mention them later. And in, I didn't show, like, I didn't put down all my collaborators, because I realized that if I'm reading, you put down the people who has co-authored with me, I cannot fit in one slide, so instead I put just collaborations. So I will talk about the work that was done in these three collaborations in my talk. So the dark energy survey, which has more than 400 scientists, but 95% of them only care about dark energy. And another collaboration, S5 or Southern Stellar Stream Spectroscope Survey, that I will actually list the people's name later because I'm actually leading it, so I think it's good for me to show them. And another collaboration, a new one, is called Orphan Aspen Treasury Collaboration, or OATS, that's named by Vasily, and I assume he will talk about more details tomorrow. Okay, so it's almost 5 p.m. People are tired and sleeping. Make sure you are not falling asleep. I'm going to give a mini talk in my talk for my first 10 minutes. And the title of that is, How Many Streams Do We Believe? So I will start with this discovery timeline for dwarf galaxies, which is very similar to what Josh Simon showed this morning for the discovery timeline, accumulated number of dwarf galaxies that we know. And I want to use this version instead of Josh's version, because in this version we specifically do a different coding here, one with the confirmed dwarf, which means we have done a spectroscope follow-up. While when we just discover from photometry, we call them dwarf galaxy candidates, and these are the open circles here. So this is the dwarf galaxy timeline, a discovery timeline, and you see the jumps here due to the Sloan and the DES and other imaging survey. That's what he mentioned this morning. And I, on the flight to here, I made another version of the stellar stream discovery timeline, and that's what we have so far. So here we have 60 of, or less, a little bit less than 60 of dwarf galaxy candidates or confirmed dwarf galaxy up to now. And for the stellar stream, we have almost 70. And we actually have jumped from, so this plot started from 1920, right? With LMC and SMC. But this plot started from 1990, because that's the first time we know the Sagittarius stream here. Okay, I should put this here. And then later on, this Palma 5 discovery, and then GD1 orphan stream you have been heard of. And then there's a lot of new ones that jump here due to the Sloan, and later jump due to the Pan-STAR. And then there's also another Pan-STAR Gaius. And these are the streams that Nora mentioned for the DES, plus a few of those Gaia ones. And there's a lot of new ones from Gaia. I think this plot probably is already out of date, because I'm sure I'm not including everything. So I actually started with Cecilia Matteau's Gauss stream package, but I think she missed a few of them and added in. And I think I'm still missing a few, so please go to that link, add whatever I'm missing there, and so that we can see it go beyond 70. And I want to say, like, so this is a stream from DES using photometry alone. This work done by Nora Schiff, who is also in the audience. And the new streams from Gaia is done using photometry plus proper motion. So those are the using the stream finder code developed by Ibada and his group. Okay, so this is what we are at now. But I want to say this one, when I make this plot, I have already excluded a few streams or streams that I think we should be leaving out from these categories. The first thing I removed are those stellar overdensities, stellar cloud or shells, whatever you want to call, which like Monarsus ring, Trian, and a few of Virgo overdensity or Hercules Aquila cloud that you heard from the last talk. And actually, I started my graduate school working on trying to follow up these as streams, but turns out to be they are not stream. That's my first project to work on stream follow-up. So what we did is a few of these monoscale string triangle over density plus minus 30 degree in galactic longitude, and we find that those stars share the same kinematics and same similar metallicity. And so we made this cartoon in my paper. Actually, Adrian made it for me, and to show that how they are connected from this disk oscillation concept. I never actually talk about this in, never show this plot in any of my talks, because I think after we submit or publish it, we realize this cartoon is too simple because there's a lot of ripple and all the stuff there. But then later on, I see Josh showing it like in the past year, so I feel, okay, we probably can still revisit it. It's not too naive to be true. And then, of course, the work was actually followed with a high res by Maria and Brandon Caesar to confirm that these not only kinematically and in metallicity similar, but also in the chemical abundance space, and that's a paper people talked about yesterday. Okay, so the other part of the stream I didn't include are these things. So they are discovered in velocity or in action space. So for example, the first very famous Helmy stream that I found in 1999, which is also a Nature paper. And then a few stream people talked about, like a Hercules and other ones that in the solar neighborhood. And there's echoes, people probably not haven't heard, but it's extreme cold halo object that Kevin Schlieffman found. And then there's a few of these LAMOST stream candidates that are found using LAMOST data or LAMOST plus Gaia data. And there's also all these streams, what you heard this morning from Wynn, that I'm excluding all of those in the discovery timeline plot I just made. And also here, we are not only need to rename them, we actually need to have a name, what stream actually mean. What's the difference between stream, moving group, debris flow, clump, or blah, 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 blah. I think that's the first thing we need to decide before we rename them. Oh. I actually want to say this, talking about rename stream or whatever, I think we are at a stage, I don't know how to type that symbol in my computer, so I actually don't know how to write them in the future. Well, I know how to do it in LaTeX, I guess, but I don't know how to do that, let's say, in PowerPoint, so that's another thing about naming the stream. Okay, so here in the whole talk, when I talk about stream, the definition is you see them coherent on sky, form a, like a linear structure, okay, that's what we discovered mostly photometrically, at least with some photometric information. That's what I'm using called a stream, and that's these 70 or 68 of them candidates or stream that are listed here. The first question I want to ask you, voting time. I have two votes you need to make, okay, in order to show you are not sleeping. How many stream do you believe? How many people think it's 100%? Great, do it. I want to know actually the distribution. How many people think it's 80% of them are real? Okay, a little bit more. How many people think it's 50%? Okay, half. How many people think it's only 30%? Oh, okay, Eugene is good. So any people haven't raised your hand? Maybe you are the last one. You don't know that there are so many streams, so you cannot make a judgment and or a guess, whatever. Yeah, this is guess, just. We'll see. This is recorded, but I don't know. The audience is not recorded. It would be good to see, like, maybe several years from now, what actually it is. Okay, so photometry versus spectroscopy. So we are talking about these 70 streams, which is discovered through photometry, and some of those recent ones with help from proper motion as well. But they tell us about the morphology, the location, and also the luminosity of those streams. But really, if you wanted to know more property about stream, you wanted to do spectroscopy and or proper motion. That's confirming those streams are real. And also from that, we can actually get the orbits of the stream, the kinematics of the stream, the metallicity of the stream, which are related to the stream progenitor. And most importantly, people who think stream are interesting because they are good mass constraint tracers. They are very good tracers to constrain the mass. But if we don't have this information, we cannot really do that. So that's now the reason why I want to use this version instead of Josh's paper, the version Josh's paper. Now let's compare those open circles and field circles. So I made the same way so that the field red circles means the one that has spectroscopic follow-up. And so taking a look at the dwarf galaxy, among the 60 of them, about 70% of them has followed up. While for the stream, among the 70 of them, only 10% have followed up. Should I be embarrassed that I want to work on stream follow-up since a graduate student and this field is so, what's the word, dearth? A lack of work on this? So I come up with this second vote count now. And this one you can vote multiple times because I'm going to show one at a time, OK? So why no stream has not been followed up spectroscopically? So I try to list a few things I think are possibly the answers. First is the spectroscopic follow-up. Oh, spectroscopically follow up a few dozen of these streams are less interesting scientifically compared to the dwarf galaxy. How many people think it's real? It's true, sorry. You can vote multiple times. No, no, I think you think it's true. I have other reasons, but if you think it's true, put up your hand. You can do multiple times for this one. But I think Adrian will say true because he thinks that GD1 is the only one we can follow up and then none of the other ones are interesting, right? Anyway, the second one is we do not have a Josh Simon in our view. That who had or have infinite telescope time in Magellan and in Keck. Who think this is true? Okay, there are some. You can vote multiple times. Okay. Sorry. Some streams were followed up but were not confirmed and therefore not published. How many people think this is true? For it's not like the counting for all the 90%, but just like at least it's a significant reason. Okay, great. Yeah, I think that's also.
I also think that dwarfs especially your efficiency of getting your right stars is easy.
I haven't finished. you can vote for. Okay, so that's the next one. So streams are technically much harder to follow up because they are more diffuse. So you have lower density in members and higher contamination. Okay, this one I actually get a lot. Next one, I think it's also possible. So it's too much work, so no one really wants to spend time on it. Everyone just want to wait for free data, like Foremost Weave will come up one day and they can work on it like they do for Gaia. How many people think this one is true? I actually think this one is the reason. Okay, well, I think of the last, how many people think all of the above? Or anyone think none of the above, so I missed something. Okay, maybe I give all the reasons, then if nobody thinks it's none of the above. Okay, anyway, so this is what I'm at, like, about a year ago, or about 2 years ago, like, why, at that time, we don't even have 70. And so I think about, I want to do this because I think this is the truth. Because no one wants to do it, then I should do it. And I think this actually is the best time for doing this stellar spectroscopy follow for the streams for three reasons. First, because we have so great photometry compared to years ago that will help our target selection. And the second, because I think it's the most important reason, is because of the Gaia GR2, with the parallax information and proper motion information, we can do much better than what we have been done, say, 5 years ago or even 2 years ago. And the last reason is my personal reason is I have stealed all the technique and the tool and the experience and the code from Josh from the dwarf galaxy side. I think I can just apply them and then make them work in stellar stream. So I think it's a perfect time to start this. And so that's what we started, this is the S5 Southern Stellar Stream Spectroscopic Survey. We start using AAT, which is a telescope in Australia, Angular Australian Telescope. It's a 4-meter telescope. Its unique part is it has a 2-degree field of view with all these 400 fiber bundles attached to a dual channel spectrograph that you can observe both in the blue wavelengths and the red wavelengths. And this collaboration has about 30 members, so the way I started is I have collaborated some people in Australia for dwarf galaxy projects. So when the DS streams were found, I went to Australia for a conference and I said, I think we should continue the collaboration and starting doing streams with AAT. So we got a group of Australians to join and to put in a proposal. And with also the people from DES and a few others that were that are the external collaborator of DES. Many of them are in this room, but I also want to highlight that a few people that I I put in bold are the early career scientists that either student or postdoc, including me. So what we did, we initially wanted just to start with the DES streams. So we started with 14 streams that NORA discovered. We exclude this Palka, which is very diffuse, very long, and it takes too much of telescope time that we cannot ask. So we want to do these 14 streams in DES footprint that are between 10 to 50 kiloparsec. And we target them for the stars between 15 and about 19.5 magnitude. As I said, AAT, this A omega has two channels, so we are doing a median resolution to get a very high precision velocity in the red, and also we get some low resolution in the blue, and we get a radial velocity precision about 1 to 5 km per second, and the 1 means the high signal to noise case. And for this particular stream here, we are selecting them using DES DR1 photometry cross-matched with proper motion from DR2. And as Nora showed in her poster, that this actually gives information about all the proper motions for most of the proper motions for these streams here that we can use for target selection. And our original goal is to measure the 6D plasma metallicity for these streams. And after that, we can characterize the stream progenitor and use that to constrain the mass of the Milky Way. So this is our status. So we started really just 9 months ago, which is not that far from now. And we requested for 50 nights, but we got 25 nights, which is not too bad. And within that 25 nights of Australia, CITUS Spring Observatory, who has observed there, you will know that we got extremely lucky. I think we only had about 20% of weather loss. And among the other 80% of the weather, we got seeing all below 1.5, which is unusual. But I think I'm extremely lucky that we got a very good run for that. And so we observed 10 streams within those 25 nights. So far, 8 of them has reduced and confirmed they are all real, at least in phase space. This already doubled the number of streams that we have with 6D information. And we are very ambitious, so we actually put in more nights for this year. And today, we are also observing an orphan stream, actually. And we'll hope to get up to 20 streams total by the end of this year. So this just gives you an example of how the data looks like. So this is an ATLAS stream. We know the proper motion, so we can select the stars around the proper motion of the stream. So this is the proper motion plot. And here is showing you the stream you tilt. So it's this stream here. We tilt it so that it's along the stream in this direction, right? And we have a total of 12 pointing. We also cover about 24 degrees. I think ATLAS stream is total more than 30 degree long, but it's beyond the DS footprint, so we didn't go further. And so each here field circle here is a field of AAT. And we put them in, this is phi 1, phi 2, the spatial coordinates. This is velocity versus phi 1 along the stream. And this is the proper motion. This is velocity versus metallicity. And this is the Kalamang diagram. And we run a Gaussian mixture model to find the probable members using the velocity, proper motion, and the metallicity. And this is what we get. So in this stream with 12 pointing, we get about 70 members. I think it's pretty convincing that these are the true members of the ATLAS stream. So you can see they follow almost similar velocity here, and they are all clumped in the proper motion space. And most important, they have a very similar metallicity, which is around minus 2.2. And they also look like a group of stars that are all from one population here. And I think someone asked a question earlier for Adrian's talk saying why GD1 the best? I do not want to say it is the best, but I have to say that we cannot really reach the 10 off stars. So we can only get about 70 stars from the red giant branch for this stream that at like 20 kiloparsec from us. Okay, so next thing we want to do with all the data is we can measure the line of sight velocity of the stream, of each stream member, and then get the velocity dispersion of the stream, the metallicity and the dispersion. We can get proper motion from the Gaia DR2, so we can fit the orbit, and we are also following up them using high-resolution spectroscopy to get the chemical abundance. And at some point, we can do this progenitor classification. And we have the data like this for 8 streams so far, and we are working hard on the other two. I'm not saying they are not real. I just think we need more time to figure out what's going on there. Okay, so what can this 60 plus 1 information tell us? That's, as I said, is our original goal, but the next work that I'm going to talk about actually was not not directly related to this, because it was not originally planned in our observing proposal, but turned out to be interesting. And what I want to say is I'm an observer. I try to get the best data and I try to get the best measurement, but I actually do not do modeling, so I'm very fortunate that I have Dennis Oker work with me on the two projects that I will mention next. One's the Turkana 3 stream, another is Orphan stream. He unfortunately cannot make this conference, but he said hi to everyone. Hi. He might watch it. Anyway. So this is the status map I mentioned earlier. So the blue ones are we observed in the 2018 BE semester. And there's a few red ones here we actually observed before the S5 survey started. It's kind of like our pilot program just to see if we can do this with AAT. So I'm going to talk about this one. You can see kind of two circles here. This is the Turkana 3 stream observed actually 3 years ago. Okay, so Turk 3, you have heard this from Josh Simon this morning. It is actually a linear tidal structure around a dwarf galaxy, Turkana 3. And it's pretty short, it's only 4 degrees on the sky, so it makes it extremely easy for us to consider the larger field of view of AAT. We almost just need two pointing to cover the entire stream. And it only take a much shorter, like a total amount of telescope time much shorter. And so that's what we did. We actually put another one just to go a little bit extended, but we roughly did this two pointing with AAT. So this is showing you how hard it is. We did this before Gaia-DR2 because it was 3 years ago. We have no information about the proper motions. So what we did, we almost observed with that, all the field observed about 1,000 targets. It turned out to be there are 25 members in the stream, not considering the dwarf part, just the stream. So when we observe all of those, we plot them in velocity and metallicity space. You can see a clump of star at minus 100 kilometers per second and a metallicity of minus 2.5. That's, we know that they are the member stars of Turkana 3. And then we plot them along the stream coordinates. You can see a very large velocity gradient, which is around 8 kilometers per second per degree. Just give you an idea that I think Power 5 stream is about 0.5 kilometers per second per degree. So compared to that, this is really large velocity gradient indicating that it's on a radial orbit. So that time we have no Gaia proper motion, but still we have the track of the stream, we have the velocity gradient of the stream. We think we can do a fit to get the orbit without knowing the proper motion. So we did this, and this is the result done by Dennis and Dennis Oker, that I want you first to look at just the black lines. So what you are seeing here is the distance to the Milky Way center as a function of look-back time. So it's on a highly radial orbit. As Josh mentioned this morning, it has a perocenter about 2 to 3 kiloparsec, and a apocenter between 40 and 50 kiloparsec. But the most interesting thing is if we put a LMC there, assuming there's no mass, and then we let it rewind, we find that in this orbit, that Turk 3 minus the distance to the LMC, at some point, there is a distance approach of about 12 kiloparsec, I think 12 to 15 kiloparsec. So this is saying that LMC mass cannot be ignored. So then we redid the fitting, including LMC, but assuming a fixed LMC mass of about 10 to the 11 solar mass. And then that's what the red line get. So it didn't break the thing in terms of the pericenter. It's still between 2 to 3. And the good part is also didn't break this part, that it still have a minimal approach to LMC around 12 to 15 kiloparsec. So that what's what we think that LMC should be considered in the whole orbit modeling. And so this is a movie to show you. On the left, what you will see is without LMC, what the orbit of Turk 3 will be. And on the right, you will see if with LMC, how the orbit will be different. So you can take a look. Okay. So you can see the blue one is Turk 3, and this one has LMC come in, and this one has no LMC. And I'll try to stop here. So what you see is because this one has no LMC perturbation, the stream and the orbit, they align to each other. While this one, because LMC is passing by and give a torque on the LMC, the stream track and the orbit of the stream is misaligned. And that is what we are expecting because of the because of the stream and the LMC had a minimal, small approach. Okay. Why I cannot go next? Okay. So we tried this, we did all of this before Gaia-DR2, and we found that if we know the proper motion perpendicular to the stream, this one, and we can predict what the LMC mass should be. It is sensitive to the LMC mass, and that's what we think there. So we try to publish, we actually put this paper on archive the day before Gaia-DR2 release, because we want to say that we can actually go constrain the LMC mass. We can predict that. So at the the day one of DR2, I think many people work on different projects, and I also work on a project. I wanted to measure the proper motion of in the perpendicular direction for Takana 3, and this is what we get. We get almost zero. So that is saying LMC is massless. Right. Okay. But that's our result, which is weird, but that's what we see. And there are a few things you can explain, like the solar reflex motion error caused by the distance error can shift from that to there, maybe if you believe. But it's not satisfied. So we originally thought we can publish a paper to predict this before Gaia-DR2, and we'll publish a quick paper after. But then we never publish because this is we don't want to publish paper saying LMC only consists of photon and nothing else, right? but the good point is now, as Josh mentioned, when we get the proper motion, we go back to do the orbit integration without doing any fitting. A pericenter of 2 to 3 kilometers per second is still true, and actually a minimum approach of 12 kiloparsec is also still true. So we didn't do this part wrong, but something is going on here that I will go back to this at the end of my talk. So I originally want to stop my talk about here, but because I want to my study talk about orphan stream tomorrow, but I do not want to give you a story saying, oh, we give you a conclusion that LMC is massless. So I have to introduce the other stream that we worked on later, which is the orphan stream, which you have heard this afternoon as well. So this was something fun. As a group of, actually it was first discovered by Vasily, but at the Aspen, and we made this, I forgot what it is, often Aspen Treasury collaboration. So what Vasily did is he plotted all the R library stars from Gaia-DR2, and you can see these structures, and after a little bit cleaning up, you can see that this long stream crossed more than 100 kiloparsec. And so this is a known, this part of the stream is known, so just to give you an idea, so this is the orphan stream that discovered in Sloan, and then later on when GCAM put online, the cow get more time to do the orphan stream extend to the southern hemisphere. So this part corresponding to that part. So it's all, so galactic plane is here. So all of these are the one above the plane. And so the part below the plane was previously unknown, and that was found using these R libraries. And if plot those stars on the sky, this is how they look like. So again, this part is the above the galactic plane, and this part is below the galactic plane. And we also overplot here the tank here. If you remember what we showed earlier, this is the footprint of the dark energy survey. So the question would be, okay, they are in the dark energy survey. What are they? Did we find them previously? And so now if I make them show the movie that Nora made for Discovery, you will see there is a stream here. Hope it show up again. Perfect match with that. So we discovered a stream called Shenab almost 6 months before this R library finding. So why at that time we didn't associate Shenab with orphan stream? I was the only one there, I think, from DES at that time. So I really want to figure that question. So I made this plot to explain this, to understand what is the pole for orphan, for the Shenab stream here, and what is the pole for the orphan stream that we never connect those two when we worked on the DES discovery. So this tells the answer. So because all these R libraries, we know the distance. Oh, I need to really move fast. Because these R libraries, we know the distance, we can break them into segments and calculate the pole for each segment. And this part corresponding to the stream part above the plane, and the red part is below the plane. So when we find the Shenab, the pole is here, while for orphan, the pole is there. So it has a big change, about 20 degrees in the polar angle. this cannot explain by just a flattening of the potential. It has to be something else. And I really need to just jump very quickly. So what you are seeing here is the effect of the LMC on the orphan stream. And you will hear more, I'm sure you will hear more about this from Vasily tomorrow. So what happened is when the orphan stream combined the LMC, perturbed it, and perturbed this part, not the top part. And so this part had this pole shift, and the top part didn't get that. Let's see if I can. Okay, so that part didn't have any pole drift, but this part get all the drift. And this one, we definitely see a proper motion perpendicular to the stream, other than the Tuck 3 stream. And again, we kind of show that we can constrain this with the constrain the mass of LMC with our libraries. So as this is also something Nora showed earlier today, that Schnapp, or say orphan, is definitely not the only one that have this effect. There are actually a lot of those in the DES stream, all more or less have some kind of offset. So this is interesting because now we have the 6D phase space information for all of these streams that in DES that we measured from S5. We can calculate what is the closest approach to LMC and what is the relative velocity at that minimal approach. And the direction here shows the increase of the LMC effect. So these are the only four streams that have been previously modeled, but we have more information now that at a different distance to LMC that should have some effect from the LMC perturbation. So we think that a simultaneous fitting later on can infer the 3D profile of the LMC. But the problem of Tuck 3 didn't solve. It should have the strongest effect. Why we see zero? I have to go faster. But here, this is Tuck 3. You'd only see an arrow. You don't see a track because they lie on top of each other. The answer is, I think, two reasons. One is when we did this calculation, we didn't consider the reflex motion of the Milky Way. So we put the Milky Way in the center. But in reality, the Milky Way should also have moved due to the effect of the LMC. Another reason is this is only showing the effect in the on-sky projection. There's also a perturbation along line of sight that we didn't consider. So we think Tuck 3 must have a very large misalignment between the distance gradient and the radial velocity. And that's next thing we're going to work on. Yeah. So that's oops, what happened? I don't know what happened here. But anyway, those are emojis. I'll stop here. I want to say that the bad thing is that in the future, if we want to measure the Milky Way shape, we have to account for LMC. The good news is maybe we can use all the stream to measure the 3D profile of LMC. And so we are continue our program. If you have a stream in the south you want us to follow, please let us know.
Thank you, Ting. Questions?
Nobody.
Okay, I have many questions, so we'll just be here for a while, Ting.
Well, people want to go for wine, maybe.
Okay. Okay. So. Okay, let's do this one first. All this talk about radial orbits and clouds, I mean, the strong velocity gradient is consistent with this idea that it's going to have a large distance gradient as well. But going back to what we were doing all those years ago was trying to find clouds.
Mm-hmm.
Well, in the models, the ancient models,
mm-hmm.
we actually expected more clouds, like the streams were the intermediate distance range and the clouds were on the outskirts. So these inner clouds are a bit odd, actually. But DES is further, right? You can probe further.
You mean finding more clouds or?
I would expect you to, if anything, we're going to find more clouds as we go further.
I published a paper called Eridanus Phoenix Overdensity 3 years ago, if you believe it is a cloud, but I think it's part of the sausage.
No, I mean at larger distances.
Oh, beyond 50. So these streams we only find like within 50 kiloparsec. I don't think beyond 50 kiloparsec will be easy because we are doing all of those with May sequence channel of stars that you can only reach about 50. If you want to find streams and stellar overdensities, say beyond 100, beyond 80 kiloparsec, I think we have to use LSST. Yeah, so the farthest stream we find here is, I think, 50 kiloparsec.
Okay, so my second question was the the things with the NLC is really fun, but I have to get a bit suspicious about how well you can really calculate the distance, like the in terms of knowing the orbits, because the orbits depend on the potential, and we don't really know the potential out there. So I'm surprised that you can be so confident about the distance. It may have nothing to do with getting the mass wrong, but just have the orbit and the timing slightly off.
Sure. I don't know what I have the mic. So I don't know what precision you're asking. So all of the good part of the stream here, because you have the main sequence. So for the follow-up, we only do red giant branch stars. But for all the discovery part, they're all finding through the main sequence Turnoff stars. So you have the Turnoff. You can get the distance from a Turnoff, which is about distance precision of about 10%, and but a lot of those stream has distance gradient, so we are not only measuring this distance but also distance gradient. But also another good thing is most of these stream has, I don't know if it's most, I think we look at two or three at least, a few of them has RLIRI star in them, so we can use RLIRI star to constrain the distance, which can get to maybe better than 5%.
But it's not a question of initial conditions, it's a question of the potential. We don't know the potential.
The Milky Way potential? Anything, in general.
It was a fourth and everything was actually allowed to vary, including the Milky Way potential.
Yeah.
For the orphan modeling, everything was allowed to vary.
Yeah,
so
I'm not so worried about orphan, I'm worried about this mystery about Tucanus.
Oh.
But it also has, it has like 9R library there.
No, it's not a distance question, it's a potential question.
A potential of the Milky Way?
Yes.
What's your question? Like, we don't know the...
Oh. The potential gives the... changes the orbits.
Yeah,
that
so
changes the timing.
Sure. So in the work we did, that work we use a fixed Milky Way potential. But I think the next step we're actually going to fit the Milky Way potential. That's something we're going to do.
In that sense, that's what Ting's conclusion was, that it was too constrained.
Yes.
Yeah, and also I want to point out for the TUX3 work that. I agree the proper motion, when we predict the proper motion depends on which potential we use, actually.
Yeah.
So if we use Jovovi's model or the other's model, it's giving different results. However, it seems the perpendicular velocity is very similar. So that's not very sensitive to the Milky Way potential when we try from different ones. I just want to point out that.
But I think Dennis learned a lot on modeling to kind of three. And so all the mistakes were then
exactly. We started this work like 2 years ago, but then often the actual one gets all the credit.
Joss?
Yeah. are we fully resolved over here? Can we play? No, joking. All right. So if we had chemistry for all these stars, we could easily distinguish globulars from dwarfs because globulars have the light element anticorrelation. Without that, do we have clues as to how many of these streams are globulars and how many of these might be dwarfs?
I have some in my computer, but I haven't showed to you as a S5 member yet. I tend not to show to the rest of the audience here. The answer is, so if we go back to this one. So I think from the width of the stream, some of these, we know that they're definitely dwarf galaxies. Then for these thin streams, as Adrian pointed out this afternoon, we actually don't know if they are ultra-faint dwarf or globular cluster, and that's the question. And one way to do this is to use metallicity dispersions. So we do get metallicity dispersions for all of those streams. So we can make some judgment. If you believe the metallicity measurements are accurate, you can make some judgment. And the conclusion here is, some has zero dispersion, some has a significant dispersion. Those thin ones, that's what I can say now, yeah.
So Ting, it's a fantantastic talk. You flashed it past, I think, quite quickly, but I didn't quite catch it.
I hope Vasily will catch it tomorrow.
how many, if any, of these could be, you know, like a good candidate like GD1 for looking for stream bumps? I mean, how many are retrograde and close?
I should say something I didn't because there are too many stuff I want to say. So this Atlas stream it's a 20 degree in the DES footprint, and I think there's another 10 to 15 degree LUM in Penstar that or other survey that we're going to cover later on. One point I want to make out is in the discovery paper that Nora wrote, there is a gap here, and there is a gap here. And whether or not you believe, we also see the gap from these 70 members. Another interesting thing we find is that You can see that here, if you have an astronomer eye, you see kind of the width here is narrower, and here the spread is bigger, and here it becomes narrower again. I mean, we only have 70 stars, you probably don't believe this is true, but I just want to point out that I don't know if that the spread here is correlated with the true gap we are seeing. So this would be an interesting stream to look at, I would say. And another stream we find is at 50 kiloparsec that I didn't show here, but that stream is because so far away that we think a lot of these, whatever the GMCs or bar feature would be minimal, so those might be also interesting. But first thing is to figure out if they are on retrograde or prograde orbit, which I don't remember. Seriously, I don't remember what's the ratio, yeah. Okay.
Could you go back to the plot that you showed that's the effect of the LMC on all the streams? So I hesitate to say this because it's something that we're interested in.
This
but,
one? Or?
But yeah, yeah. So this should really say the direct force of the LMC, right?
So I should say this is the force assuming it's impulsive. So we are not doing integration. We're just saying at the minimal approach, what is the
But directly the from the bound mass to the LMC.
Yeah.
Yeah. So again, Catherine's shooting lasers at me with her eyes. But I mean, if you believe that the LMC is as massive as Dennis tells us and other, Gertina and other people, then the back reaction of the Milky Way's dark matter should also have a significant effect on streams. There can be density enhancements, like Martin Weinberg was showing us, of 30% in other regions. Yeah. Have you thought about what streams might be sensitive to those things, too?
So I think the point we made this is to show like the previous model stream before often they're all far away from LMC so that the effect should be small and we need to be careful. But in terms of...
I guess I'm just objecting to your title. If you change it to direct force from LMC, I'd
okay.
be happy.
Well, it is a way to quantify, but I agree it was not... I didn't put error bar there. Well, yeah, anyway, that's the point. That's why I said preliminary. I don't even have an in prep because I don't think we are publishing any of this. Yeah.
So the Sagittarius was much more massive in the past. Mm-hmm. So is it possible that the Sagittarius could have influenced some streams, not perhaps these ones, but other ones?
No, actually, when Dennis did the work, he actually looked at the impact from the Sag on often. And the conclusion is, Sherman. Definitely he mentioned about in the paper, but I don't know how what is the effect of Sag on often stream. So yeah. But that was the original session there, they'll just take it off.
I think it's more difficult also because you need to follow some days.
Oh yeah, you need to know the mass loss. It's certainly a much cleaner test. The second question I wanted to ask was, to infer the 3D profile of the LMC, do you not then have to worry about both the SMC and the LMC? I can certainly see that to lowest order is just a point mass, and
that's why you
must use the microphone, sure.
Yeah, I'm sorry, Wayne. Hey, Dennis. I was dying to say that. I think, for this, you can always like crank up the mass. And that will just include the bound pair.
Profile.
Yeah.
It's much more difficult.
I think this is. I mean, to get the profile, I think this is like really like ambitious because there's
the whole.
Really like ambitious is what I would prescribe.
Yeah, I think it's. I mean.
I need you guys, the modeler, to try to work on this.
Really, like, get the mass profile. That's just like, I don't know. I don't know about that. I think perhaps for the things that are very close to the LMC. Right, then you might actually probe something about the mass profile, but there's also the whole back reaction of the halo and all that, and that might actually complicate things. And then also, it's what do you assume for the shape of the potential? You know, certainly from like cosmological simulations, as a function of radius, you can have changes in the shape of the potential, right? So it's not like all the isodensity contours are the same; they change, they vary shape. So, yeah.
Really like ambitious.
We have time for one last quick question.
So it's a general question about the current situation of all the streams in the Milky Way. Like, I don't know, from the observational side, do we have any conclusion, like what is the kinematic properties of all the streams in the Milky Way? Do they like randomly just distributed in the Milky Way, and the kinematics is chaotic, or are there any common patterns for all these streams? I don't know.
Okay, I will let Sherman answer, but I think we want to know that. That's why we are doing this, right? No. You can answer your version.
I was actually thinking about a question in my mind. Sorry.
Oh, okay. You are not trying to end. I don't need a microphone.
No, I don't want to ask a question.
So I think we, as I said, we only have the orbit of the stream, seven streams so far, right? So the reason we want to know is like, are all, most of these streams have a pericenter within a few kiloparsec from the Milky Center, or actually they are all 20 kiloparsec away from Milky Way, and why they get disrupted. I think we don't know the answer, and that's why we are doing all of those measurements. That's why we need more of the follow-ups. Yeah.
Okay, so maybe, Sherman, you can ask the question with a glass of wine.
Sure.
So, let's think again. Let's think. Let's figure out the session.